When the Lord is our only hope, I'm going to talk about a man that we just read about, Naaman, who had this very high position in the army of the Aramean king. This is in 9th century B.C. There was an Israeli king whom you can associate with this happening. His name was Uzziah, Uzziyahu. Remember, Isaiah said that he prophesied in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. Now, what happened to Uzziah, his father died when he was still quite young, and at 16 he became the king of the southern kingdom, Judea. And he was tremendously successful at everything he did, building just tremendous places in Judea that were a blessing to the whole nation, gathering a huge army that was the most powerful in the whole region. And he was successful until he stumbled because of this one characteristic. And it's a thing that God hates greatly. It says he knows the proud how. You remember? How does God know the proud? Afar off. And this man was tremendously successful until he became proud. And he entered into the place where they did the incense that only the priests were supposed to perform. And he began performing a service that wasn't really his. And the Lord smote him with leprosy. And he was a victim of leprosy, being quarantined. He couldn't function as king. He couldn't function among the people. He was quarantined until the day he died. Now, this man that we're going to talk about, he could have slipped into the same thing, except the Lord caused him to turn around and he rescued him. He heard the admonition of his own servants and he changed. But here he was this powerful commander of a great army. These Aramaeans knew what conquest was. They were some of the powerful people of their day. And he was the commander of the army, but he had leprosy. Now, leprosy, I think today, can be cured, but in those days it couldn't. And you were a marked person if you had leprosy. And he obviously was struggling with this skin ailment, and he felt very very much a captive himself in many ways, because this was a terrible illness. They had captured an Israeli little girl who became the servant to Naaman's wife, and she felt very badly about her, she called him her master, that he was struggling so with this illness. I'm talking about when the Lord becomes our only hope. There was no cure for this except some miracle would happen. So this young maiden, this Israeli, said to Naaman's wife, "There in Israel, we have a prophet. And if my master would go there, he could be healed. So the word got to Naaman that there was a prophet in Israel who could heal. His name was Elisha. And he went to the king, and the king said, I think you should go there. And the king, the Aramean king, it was probably King Ben-Hadad II, who was in the 9th century B.C., he gave a letter written to the Israeli king that Naaman would take with him. There were gifts of gold and silver and wonderful clothing. He just decided to take an abundance of gifts to impress the people of Israel. And he went there to Israel. I'm skipping a lot of this because it could be a very long story, but he went there to Israel and the prophet didn't even come out in the way he anticipated. He thought, well, I'm the commander of the army, you know. When he hears about me, it's going to be something. Well, he sent his servant out and told him to go dip in the Jordan 7 times, and he would be healed. And he was sort of insulted. He went away angry. What? You know, in Syria, We have better rivers than those mud holes in Israel. He had his problem with arrogance. We all know about arrogance. Sometimes maybe we've had a problem with it, or we've seen people who've had a problem with it. And so his servants reasoned with him. You know, Father, they called him. Father, if he had told you to do something fantastic and great, you know, it would have sounded differently to you. But he just told you this simple thing. Now, why don't you forget about this other stuff and go and do what he told you to do? So he goes and humbles himself and dips in the Jordan, and lo and behold, his skin becomes like a young boy. If you've ever had skin problems, young people in their teens have problems with acne. Older people have psoriasis and other things. But if you've ever had skin problems, and you know, we have all of these creams. They take wrinkles out of your face. They take the turkey neck out of you if you're old. They make a guy 85 look like 20. Only guess what? They don't work. They don't work. They ain't what they say they are. But this is the real thing. This is a person with a gift from God for supernatural healing. And here this man stands, this great commander, and he's a new person. And guess what happens? It not only transforms him physically, it transforms him spiritually. He says, now I know that there's no God in all the world. They had their whole category of gods, you know. And he says, that's not the real thing. Coke advertised the real thing, remember? Which it isn't. But here's the real thing, that God can heal, and the God of Israel is the God of creation, the one true God. So he says, now I know There's nothing more sure than knowing, is there?
Now I know there's no God in all the world except in Israel. Now, it started out to be a cleansing of the body, and it ends up a total transformation of the whole person. He becomes a witness of God's delivering power. This man who comes from a heathen nation, who never knew what it was to know God, becomes a witness because God transformed him through the prophet. Now, centuries later, God is concerned to send his Messiah, his Mashiach, his anointed one that he had promised to Israel. And here's a woman who has suffered 12 years. She has a bleeding problem that they can't seem to stop. Now, in Mark's gospel, it gives a little more detail than we had in Luke. We read that in Luke this morning. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. Gracie had an interesting experience. Gracie's had three traumas because of a doctor treating her wrongly. And she had a doctor in a very high position at U of M Hospital say the same thing to her that a doctor here in this area who's very dear to her said. They both said, "Honey, you know, doctors haven't been good for you." And these were good doctors who said, and it is possible. I'm not branding the whole medical field. Listen, I've had doctors care for me that did well for me. But let me just tell you, just like in any other field, now, we have a lawyer here who would say to you for sure, they're lawyers and then they're lawyers. They're doctors and then they're doctors. They're fantastic doctors and they're not too good doctors. Well, this lady had the experience of one after another spending all this money. You know, if you spend money and it does you well and you come out ahead of the game, you were sick and now you're well, there's no complaint. But to spend everything you have and you're still in the hole, so to speak, that is extremely disappointing and debilitating. No more money? Not too concerned about doctors? Where do I turn? So she had heard about Yeshua. And she has such a burst of faith, of confidence. I know if I can go up and just touch the hem of his garment, just touch him, and I have the right kind of faith, this whole thing can be solved. And there's this crowd milling around, pushing at him. And he says, "Who touched me?" And his disciples say, "Who touched you?" There are all these people lunging at you and pushing at you. Yeah, but touching. Touching spiritually, reaching God spiritually and saying, "I fully put my confidence in you." Even you don't have to say it. It can be inside of you.
It doesn't say this woman yelled this out, did it? She just thought to herself, only I can touch him, I'll be healed. And he said, who touched me? And he realizes that this woman is here. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. You know, I went through 7 years of extreme torment, and doctors told Gracie I would never be healed. And the Lord healed me, so I know what it is to suffer. And 7 years is a long time, and sometimes my faith was like that verse in Isaiah, like a dimly burning wick. I said, oh, Lord, don't let it go out. There's just a little tiny spark left. Have mercy. And the Lord healed me. And this woman waited longer than I waited. She waited 12 years. That's a long time to suffer. She knew what suffering was. And finally, the anointed of God, who healed me, said to her, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. In a moment of time, 12 years of suffering were ended. So we go back to the one who is the sweet singer of Israel, the psalmist, and he states something that involves all of this trial, and he puts it this way, I waited patiently for Adonai, the Lord. He turned to me and heard my cry. You know what he doesn't tell? How long he waited. Doesn't tell you. You know why, I think? People reading this in the centuries after David would think, perhaps the Lord will hear my cry. And it doesn't matter how long you wait. Each person waits a different amount of time and has different circumstances. But when you turn to the Lord, and he hears your cry. He lifted me out of this slimy pit, whatever your pit is. However impossible it looks, however slimy and filthy and impossible this circumstance looks, he lifted me out of the mud and mire. He set my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand. It reminds you of what Yeshua says. After he gives his greatest exposition, probably, which is the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapters 5 through 7, he says, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a man who built his house on a rock. And when all these storms come, and dash against that house, it won't fall because it's built on Yeshua's words and Yeshua's promises. And that's where stability is, in Yeshua himself. And he gave me a firm place to stand, and he does what he did for Martin. He put this new song, I like that song, Martin, Hineni. That's what Moses said when God called him. And that's what Isaiah said. Hineni shalacheni. Here am I, send me. He set my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand. He put a new song in my mouth, a hymn of praise to our God. Many will see and fear and put their trust in the Lord. Salvation for everybody who sees it. See, I think God brings about these healings and deliverances for us, not just for our welfare. For others seeing will say, well, if God can do that for him or for her, he can do it for me. Blessed is the man who makes the Lord his trust. You want to be blessed? You want to be encouraged? You want to have your house built on a solid rock instead of sand that's going to wash away? You make the Lord your confidence, your trust. Who does not look to the proud, to those who turn aside to false gods. And you know what Gracie and I have done? We've waited quite a while for her to be healed. God gave her a promise of healing. This is the third big test physically she's gone through. And we're confident because God sent her a prophecy in a most unexpected way that he would heal her. And we think back to the times that Gracie went through impossible situations. 80% of her liver was gone because the doctor not following up on the medication he gave her, and God healed her. A doctor treating her wrongly and she got cancer. And the Lord brought her through that. And now the Lord's going to bring her through this with her eyesight. And we're waiting. And it says, I waited patiently. It's been almost 3 years. But I waited 7 years. God never tells you how long you're going to wait. To the church in Laodicea in the beginning of Revelation, this church is haughty and says, we're rich. We're increased with goods. We have need of nothing. And God said, oh yeah? You don't know this. You're wretched, pitiful, poor, blind, and naked. I advise you to buy from me gold refined in the fire. You know what that is? Faith. Faith is refined by fire. But it's better than gold. Faith will carry you through when gold won't. Many, O Lord my God, are the wonders you've done. Think back to the things he's done for you. The things you planned for us, no one can recount to you. Were I to speak and tell of them, they would be too many to declare. Count your blessings, the song says. Name them one by one, and it will surprise you what the Lord has done. Think back to what God has done for you. The blessings are more than the problems. And when we look to the Lord, who is a God of deliverance, you know what? The name Jesus is a translation of the Hebrew Yeshua. You know what it means? Deliverance. To be delivered. That's what happened to these people. Naaman was delivered. The woman with the issue of blood after 12 years was delivered. I can testify God delivered me. I wouldn't be here today. If God hadn't delivered me and my problem, I'd be gone. Believe me. The doctor said to me, this was at the beginning, Mr. Brickner, you're a young man, but at the rate you're going, you're not going to live to be a very old man. She moved out of town, or I would have invited her to my 80th birthday. So she was wrong. But God was merciful. That's why she was wrong. God showed me mercy, or I wouldn't be here. And God has mercy for each of you, whatever your problem is. And he's a God who sent the Messiah, whose name is Yeshua, deliverance. In Psalm 50, verse 15, he says, "Call upon me in the day of trouble. I will deliver you, and you will honor me." Now, David Stone has something to add to this that God has given him, and I told him, come on up here, David, and give what God has given you.
It's interesting. One of the things that struck me is the context of the healing of the woman with the hemorrhage. And there's another very interesting story around it. And some of you may know that story, the story around it. When Jesus heals this woman with the hemorrhage, he's actually going somewhere else. Okay? He's going to heal us a girl. And on his way to heal the girl dies. What's interesting is the girl is 12 years old. How long has this woman been having her hemorrhage? 12 years. Okay. This little girl has been alive as long as this woman has been bleeding. Okay, we don't think of that way. So, you know, sometimes, you know, some of you who teach small children, you know, it's striking to teach look at a small child, 12 years old, and say, that woman was bleeding as long as you've been alive. Okay? And what's interesting, in the story, the child does die. And in this story, in this version at least, no one has any hope. Okay, she's dead. Okay, end of story. Okay, but you're right. But it's not the end of story because Jesus is there. They don't see that. They're thinking dead is dead. You know, it's all she wrote. That's what they're thinking. Okay, but Jesus is there. It's not the end. And he raises her from the dead. And you know how much he knows people because he says, give her something to eat. He is so in tune as the Creator God. He is so in tune with where we are at that he says, I know you're hungry. I made you. I made that little tummy. And I know you need some food. So he says, give her some food. Those of you who have been to Israel, know that in Jerusalem, there's a very, very old, almost, I would say, if it was in this country, I would say almost like a pueblo, like a clay house. And it's only the front entrance of the house, because it's very old. And it's right in the city of Jerusalem. And right above the doorway of that house, there's an inscription. Okay, and it relates to the story. Okay, does anyone who's been in Israel remember that house? Okay, and carved in this archway, in this little house in Jerusalem, are the words Talitha Kumi. Okay, in Mark, that's what Jesus says to the girl. Little girl, come forth. Come out. Come out from where you are, from where your soul is. Come out from there and live. Okay? People don't have hope But where Jesus is, there is life. From the dead. From the dead, there is life.
I love this little girl. But one quick comment. The woman who got cleansed, healed after 12 years, I think according to Mosaic law, she was considered unclean, right? With her bleeding, unclean. And the Lord cleaned her up, gave her healing. Now, I would like you to take a trip with me. We're going to go to Naaman's home in Syria. I'm sure it's well furnished. He is a very famous person. And I want you to look at the little girl. Maybe she's 12. We'll just say she is. And I want you to look at her and understand that before she speaks to Naaman about going to see the prophet for healing, she looks at him and she understands this man stole everything from her. He stole her parents, her home, her family, her culture, her country, her childhood, growing up free. Now she's a servant. He stole everything, and yet she didn't gloat. She didn't say to herself, well, you stole everything, and I'm glad that you have leprosy. She had great compassion. She had God's compassion that she would share how he could be healed. God was very pleased with her that he, although she's not named, she is in the Bible. He immortalized her in the Bible. And I wonder if everything was stolen from us, what our attitude would be.
I just had a few thoughts about what Harold shared. And many of you know I went through a similar experience that Harold went through. Mine wasn't for 7 years. I thank God for that. But it was for a whole summer. And it was a time of great testing and torment. And I remember when I came to the Lord, you know, you're kind of wondering, what was that all about? Why did I have to go through that? And I remember as a very young believer, I mean, just a couple months in the Lord, reading through Psalm 119, and I remember these verses that really spoke to me. And it's Psalm 119, verse 71, and then again in 75. And this is what the Lord wrote. He says, "It is good for me that I have been afflicted, that I may learn your statutes. The law of your mouth is better to me than thousands of shekels of gold and silver." And then again he says, "I know, O Lord, that your judgments are right, and that in faithfulness you have afflicted me." And you know, I just was thanking the Lord for what I went through. I thought I would never be able to do that. But as I was thinking about what Harold was sharing, I was thinking that, you know, it's not so much that the Lord wants to do something for us in delivering us or healing us or whatever that might be that we're looking for. I believe what he really wants to do is reveal himself to us, and that he wants more than anything else to have that intimate relationship with us. And sometimes we have to go through those kind of difficulties and those kind of trials and tribulations to where there's no other place to turn. I remember my mom sharing that poem with me about the hound of heaven. And I was just sharing it with a coworker at work last night because he was telling me, he says, something's going on in my life. He says, man, all these things are happening. I says, the Lord's on your trail. You know, but the hound of heaven will pursue us and pursue us and chase us and then, you know, take things from us that are hindering our turning to him. And we all just need to get to that point where we just give it all to him and say, Lord, here I am. All that I have and all that I am is yours. Just do with me as you please. And I really appreciated Martin's song today about, here I am, Lord, here I am. Take me. And Martin, that should be all of our prayers. Thank you.
I'd also like to add something to this. May seem like a small thing, but it was a big, very big thing for me. Just thinking about the faith of this woman with the hemorrhage. I think Betty was probably right. She's probably unclean, considered unclean for 12 years. Imagine what that must have been like in her culture to be considered that way for 12 years. But what also occurred to me was the woman that touched the hem of Jesus' garment and the faith that she displayed. And it occurred to me that God so wants to have a relationship with us that he will grab onto almost anything, any display of faith, because he so loves us and so wants us to have fellowship with him. I had an experience. This experience was so long ago that cigarettes were 20 cents a pack. Imagine that, how long ago that was. I was in college, and I was an unbeliever, but I had taken a job playing piano for congregational singing and directing a little church choir. The church was brave enough to hire an unbeliever to take charge of their music, little music program. And I did that for 3 years, used the money they paid me to play poker with. That was my gambling money at the college. And I was starting at age 15, I was a heavy smoker. And by the time, I was a couple of years into college, I really wanted to quit. And I could not. Tried over and over, and I could not stop. This may seem like a small thing, but if for those who smoke, you know how hard it is, what a habit that is. And I could not stop. They hired me, and I argued with them continuously about the existence of God. I was raised in a family where my father was an atheist, and my mother was irreligious, and I argued with these people, this church people, over and over again about the existence of God. And then in my third, toward the end of my third year in college, I had gotten into a debate or an argument at church one Sunday morning with somebody there, and I don't even remember what the subject was. But I came back to my dormitory room, and I sat down by myself, and I lit up a cigarette. And was smoking, and I said sarcastically, God, if you're as powerful as everybody says you are, why don't you help me give this up? And I put out the cigarette. And an hour went by, and 2 hours went by, and 3 hours went by, and I had no desire to smoke. I went to the church meeting that evening, and I said, you know what, I think I may have quit smoking. Well, that's wonderful, I said. Good, then you won't smoke in our cars anymore and smell up our cars. And the next morning came by and I had it was absolutely gone. It was like I had never smoked in my life. Now, the reason why I mention that, although it may seem like a small thing, is that It wasn't even faith, it was just sarcasm. It was like the father in the prodigal son story, constantly looking down the road for that son to come home. And as soon as he saw him, he ran to meet him. All I had to do was to say God sarcastically, and he came. He was there. He took advantage of that small, that kind of response. Didn't have the faith that this woman had who touched the hem of Jesus. But all I had to say was, God, why don't you do this if you're so powerful? And he did it. And I have been a believer now for 57 years. I have never regretted making that decision for a moment. It revolutionized my life. And not only did it give me a relationship with God, and I'm talking about a relationship with God, not just some vague philosophical belief, but a personal relationship. Not only that, but what it led to, the people that I met along the road, the wife that I married, all of these people that God put in my life, other believers who helped me, guided me, mentored me, year after year, decade after decade. And never have I been sorry. It is the single greatest thing that ever happened to me in my entire life. And I look forward to finishing off my life in faith to the Lord.